All right, thank you all for coming and staying so late. My name's Jeb Fields. I'm from Virginia Tech. I'm going to talk about solute transport through a pine bark substrate. So we all know the nursery industry is a big industry, and about two-thirds of this industry is containerized production. And here in the Southeast especially, most of these containers are filled with pine bark substrates, which are generally have high air spaces and therefore low water holding capacities. You can have as little as about 20-25% of the volume of the container actually filled with solid particles. Pine bark substrates also have a relatively low surface charge as compared to soil materials, so they hold relatively little ions. So some issues we have, especially with our fertility management, we use both controlled release fertilizers, and at times we can add liquid fertilizers for spot checking. And we also generally have frequent irrigation events, so we have relatively high or low nutrient retention, which will lead to high solute leaching. So a lot of research has been done in the past, especially on controlled release fertilizers, are like this, where you look at a macro scale release of CRFs over the course of a time. This is about a year long. And what we wanted to do is look at one of these data points and see what's going on during an actual irrigation event. So what we wanted to do is bridge our knowledge gap for soil substrates using applications and theories from soil science, and therefore we could characterize the fundamental principles of how solutes move through the pine bark substrate. So the way we did this is we created breakthrough curves, and a breakthrough curve, I'll just describe it real quick, is a graphical representation of the relative concentration of a tracer solution that you put in over the total volume that's coming out. And by that I mean if you apply a solute to the top of a column or a container, you want to see the effluent, whether it's relative to the concentration you're putting in. So if you're at the same concentration, you're up high at a 1. If you're at nothing, you're down at the bottom. And so this graph is actually a theoretical graph, and this is known as piston flow. And this just basically represents 100% displacement. So if you look at the little graphic, you can see as you apply your tracer solution, it would move as a plane all the way through the container. And then once it came out the bottom, you would hit all the way up to your 100% relative concentration. And then you would switch back to deionized water, and that deionized water would completely displace everything in a plane again. And when that came to the bottom, you would go all the way back down to zero. But what really happens more often is we have lags and speed. Some of them speed up, so we generally see ions coming through faster than the water would show through pure displacement, and some ions are lagged back behind. So what we want to do is we want to look at both anion and cation transport separately in saturated and unsaturated pine bark substrates. So what we did is we made our 9-1 pine bark sand by volume mix, and we limed it to have appropriate pH, and we set these on outdoor production under pads or irrigation pads for about a month to simulate actual nursery conditions. And then we took all the substrate out and we mixed it in a bucket, and then we packed them in these columns. So we used a column that was 30 centimeters long, which represented the volume of about a 1-gallon pot, and we wanted to have a smaller column and a large one on the top so we could lift these and drop them multiple times, and this allows us to have uniform bulk density throughout this center column, similar to a container. So first, we wanted to have a setup for our saturated columns, and the way we did this is using Marriott bottles, which allows to keep a constant pressure head flowing through the system at all times, so you're having even effluent come out at all times, same flow rate. And the way we can do this is we can have both deionized water and our fertilizer or tracer solution connected to a three-way valve, and we can be flowing deionized water through and then switch the valve at any time, and then the fertilizer will instantaneously start entering the system, and then we can switch back. For unsaturated column setup, we use the same column, but we wanted to keep it at a steady state but undersaturated, so not all the pore space is filled with water. And the way we did this is we fit our column with a diffuser on the top and a false bottom cap on the bottom, and then we just poured a certain volume of water at every periodically timed instance, and we were able to tell that this was keeping the system at a uniform, continuous moisture content. So the way we did this for both of these, we saturated the columns for 1 hour with deionized water, and then we poured or ran deionized water through the columns until we had a baseline EC effluent of zero in whichever manner, whether it was the saturated or unsaturated manner. And then we would turn our three-way valve or start pouring in from on the unsaturated our tracer solution, which was made of 100 milligrams per liter of nitrate, phosphate, and potassium. And we would let the tracer solution go through for about three pour volumes. And a pour volume is the total amount of pour space in the container, so the airspace and the water inside. And we would collect samples of effluent every 150 milliliters. And then after three pour volumes of the tracer solution had gone in, we'd switch back to the deionized water and still collecting our 150 milliliter effluent fractions. We'd let that run for three more pour volumes. And at the end, we'd analyze all these for electrical conductivity as well as the individual ion concentrations. So this is what we actually get, what we can see. And this is our breakthrough curve for unsaturated in the open dots and the saturated in the clear ones. Right here we have our cumulative effluent volume and our relative electrical conductivity concentration on the y-axis. And if I put back our theoretical piston flow model, we can see, as we expected, some ions come out almost instantaneously, and the unsaturated always comes out a little before the saturated. They never quite get to the full concentration, which I'll explain that in a little bit. And then as you switch it back, which is where this red line occurs, you can see that, again, the unsaturated stops to drop the concentration faster than the saturated. Then we model this data using a logarithmic model just so we could actually see pure lines that would fit here, and they follow the same trend with the unsaturated moving quicker than the saturated. So why is this happening? Well, you would think the saturated would move faster because of our pore velocity distribution. And by that, I mean the closer you are to the surface of a particle, the slower the water is going to move and the solutes are going to move within it. And in when you're unsaturated, you have an airspace in between that pore, so you have only the slower moving water. However, we also have what's called diffusion, and that's based on your osmotic potential. And so when there's more water in the saturated container, when the solutes interact, they spread out, and there's more diffusion, lateral diffusion and backward diffusion inside a saturated container. So these two kind of canceled each other out. So what we left with, and we found from previous experimentation, was in unsaturated flow, we get a lot of channeling. So first we get a little few channels come through the bottom, and then they spread out a little more, and they spread out a little more until you fill up the container from the bottom. And because of this, we're seeing much more rapid movement through the unsaturated than the saturated. So then we looked at our individual anions, and we saw they followed the exact same pattern. And this is for nitrate, and our phosphate was almost identical to this. We also looked at our cation transport, and this is actually in milligrams per liter, which is the 100 is where we were at, so it's the same as the relative concentration. And you see that our potassium ions never quite made it nearly as high as the nitrate or the anions, and that's because of the cation exchange capacity of the bark inherently was pulling back on the positive charges of the anions because the bark has a more negative charge. And this is the reason why in the original electroconductivity graph we never quite made it to the top, because our potassium never quite got all the way up. It was being drawn back. So in summary, what we mostly found is that our anions move freely, and our cations had more chemical interactions, which we expected. We saw that unsaturated flow conditions provided an increased solute transport through the column. But the major thing we saw was that these ions are coming out really fast. So some implications from this. This is a very easy approach that you can assess solute movement through a substrate, and this can be used to compare substrates against each other as far as solute transport is concerned. And you can implement this type of analysis to understand nutrient leaching better during an individual irrigation event. So I would first and foremost like to give special thanks to Tyler Hoskins, a colleague of mine who's in the middle, and this work was done with me and him as part of his master's thesis research, and he was unable to present it today. We worked with our major professors, Jim Owen, as well as James Altlin, Alex Namara, and Julie Brindley. And are there any questions?
So would your research suggest in a greenhouse that you pre-water with clear water before fertigating?
You could, and as we think, if there's more water inside the container, you'll have more chance for that solutes to spread throughout the container and
so
stick
more.
We believe so. We believe so. Yeah. It's just the beginning stages. So. Yes.
If you integrate the area under these curves, does all of the fertilizer you apply actually come out?
Not with the potassium. And actually, one thing we saw with the potassium is you could relate the. Because the way we used to measure these individual anions was with an ion chromatography, and we also looked at calcium and magnesium as they came out, which we didn't put any in, and we could see that the calcium and magnesium that came out was actually correlated with how much potassium was lagged behind, which we thought was a neat way just to prove the cation exchange capacity of the bark.
Okay.
Thank you.